Welcome to a special Friday edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. John Schmoke, Lance Meadow with you. I mentioned it earlier in the week, so I'm not going to make believe this is live. It is not. This is a pre-recorded interview that we did on Thursday because the Giants office is closed for Good Friday. Happy Easter for those of you celebrating Easter this weekend. So we're going to talk to Kyle. His draft book is out from NDT Scouting. It is big. It is impressive. It is colorful. Kyle, thanks for joining us. As always, Kyle Krabs, who's the head of NDT Scouting, the creator, the founder, you name it. You got John Schmuck and Lance Meadow in East Rutherford, New Jersey. How are you today?
Yeah, I'm glad we could provide your avid Giants fans with some content on Good Friday here and bridge the gap over the long weekend. It's my pleasure to join you guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and of course, you guys saw Kyle on our combine shows. He's out in Indianapolis, and he joins us every year, does a great job. And as usual, an exhaustive book, Kyle, a great guide to the draft, one of the best ones I see every year. Why don't you tell fans how they get it and all the work you put into it?
Sure. This year's prospectus features 300 prospects for the NFL draft. Each one of those guys is put through a film evaluation, and then that film evaluation is complemented with a number of metrics as it relates to a historical context of players at that position, so production and experience for quarterbacks, so on and so forth. You can go to ndtscouting.com. If you want to go directly to buy the guide, at the top of the website, there's a bar that reads 2018 NFL Draft Prospectus. You click that link, it will take you to the download portal, but it will prompt you to register for the website first. If you want a little bit more background, pinned at the top of the page is a preview. It includes two reports from the actual prospectus, Baker Mayfield and Darius Geis. So some pretty prominent names for you to get an idea of what you're getting for your money.
Excellent. Folks, go check that out. It is really a great guide. And, Kyle, the one thing I do like about your guide, and I think what a lot of times what happens when you get around draft time, there seems to be a big consensus from expert to expert, and everyone's list and mock drafts all kind of look the same. And I respect you a lot in the way you do this because your list is always very different. I don't think you allow other people's opinions and the general thoughts about the draft to kind of influence you. For example, I'll just give an example with the folks out there. You have Chukwuma Okorafor as your 12th best prospect in the draft. A lot of other people have him as a third or fourth round pick. How do you go about the process, and how do you try to keep the noise out so you just trust what you see and you don't kind of get rolled up into the mob and just head down the road with everybody else?
Right. Well, I think you can compartmentalize the dynamic of my draft guide versus other draft guides into a couple different areas. One is the guys that are on TV, and they want to be right, right? They want to be right in forecasting the draft and who lands where and so on and so forth. So their boards are predicated on what information they're being given about who likes whom and where players are likely to go and be off the board by. I don't really care, personally, where they get drafted. I'm trying to project who's going to be a successful NFL player. So it's if you're expecting similar rankings to Kuiper or Jeremiah or McShay, you're going to get a little bit of sticker shock, because what I essentially do is me and my team, we watch film on incoming seniors throughout the course of the season, and then, oh, obviously, you know the high-profile underclassmen coming into any given year. We finalize our watch list once the Senior Bowl invitations come out of our 300 players. And from that juncture on, I don't read anybody else's content. I don't read anybody's rankings. I watch the players in a vacuum as best as I can. And then when it's all said and done and I have a full list done and I put that into a 1 to 300 list, then I'll go back and I'll start comparing and contrasting to some of the other people that are out there. But I really try my best to make these my rankings, and I think that's what makes it a unique product, because, as we said, some of the higher profile draft analysts that are out there on television, they want to be right as far as when people are coming off the board, where that's not my objective.
No, and I think that's important for you to set the difference between them versus you. You're looking at the overall talent upside, and they're more about placement so that fans can get excited about who may be in what spot at what time. From a big picture perspective, Kyle, you know, you went through the entire process of how you evaluate these players, and then, you know, we're getting to the point where you had the combine and then you have the pro days. I'm curious, how much does your opinion change of a player, or how much do you let the pro day performance influence your take on a player after you really have spent the entire year watching the collegiate film? How often does that happen?
Very, very rarely, if ever. I can't exactly think of any specific examples of a player that came out and crushed their pro day that had me scrambling back to their tape to reassess and change my opinion. Of course, these guys are going to knock the pro days, you know, out cold. They've been practicing these scripts for weeks and weeks and weeks. You know, there's the big one that stands out, and it's a player that I'm nowhere near as high on as some of my contemporaries. It's Wyoming QB Josh Allen. It's a perfect example. Mel Kiper just had some kind of press availability earlier in the week, and he was asked about, you know, Josh Allen and his status as a prospect, and Mel says, you know, the accuracy concerns, those are a thing of the past. He threw with accuracy at the combine, and he threw with accuracy at his pro day. Well, it's not really a functional application of what he does. And a guy like Josh, you know he's going to pop in those instances because he's got the million-dollar arm. So for me, I like to come out and see a guy compete. I don't have a problem with the guy standing on his athletic testing numbers if he did really well at the pro day. I take more value in a player that's willing to go to a workout and do on-field workouts at a team facility where you're going to get him out off his script. You're going to get him off his comfort zone. And I really don't have access to those. Mm-hmm. So I don't let anything after the combine really influence my decision per se.
Yeah, and I think that's the smart way to do it. You mentioned each team gets those 30 visits, and they'll put these players through workouts and make the players do things they're going to want them to do once they're on the roster. And I think those private workouts have a much better impact. We're going to tease this, and at the end of the interview, we're going to kind of touch on the second overall pick, your thoughts and strategy. But we've kind of been doing that for the last 3 or 4 weeks. We want to touch on some of the other guys on your list here that I think maybe you look at a little bit differently than some other people. And you have Connor Williams ranked as your third best player in this class. And I know a lot of the concerns about him from people is that his 2017 tape maybe didn't line up with his 2016 tape. He missed a lot of games because of injury. I've heard some people even think because of his arm measurements at the combine, they think he might wind up as a guard and not a tackle. Why do you love Connor Williams so much, and where do you think he might end up going in the draft?
Yeah, I think Connor's probably a really good bet to end up hearing his name called in the top 20. Look at some teams like maybe Arizona would make sense to him at 15. Just because that team's kind of at an awkward juncture in the draft order. But Connor, for me, what really impressed me about Connor was his ability to absorb contact and reset his base with his feet. What I mean by that is he can take a set of hands. A defensive lineman can line their hands up and catch him square in the chest, and Connor can take that blow and then reset his feet very quickly and come to balance and get back onto a powerful base. And I don't necessarily have a problem with the people that want to suggest that Connor Williams could play guard at the next level, because he certainly could. In a zone-style system, he could be very, very good there. But to dismiss him because of his arm length with 33-inch arms, that's above the baseline. I mean, there's a threshold here that teams have. It's usually 32.5. My personal threshold is 32.25, where you have a really hard time finding successful NFL offensive tackles below that number. He's above that number. And I think it just feels like the same paralysis that we had last year with Cam Robinson, where Cam Robinson was a top five player on my board last year. And he ended up sliding to the early second round. The Jaguars landed him, and he started all year. And he was one of the assets to this new power running offense that the Jaguars had him featured. So I don't know if he was the flavor of the month for a while and we decided it's time to move on, or we overanalyzed because, you know, he had one bad game before the injury and then he got hurt and then he came back and he was still kind of feeling his way through. But Connor Williams is a player I think could be a plug-and-play starter at the next level, and for that reason, he's really high up on the list.
Well, you brought up his injury history, and that's where I think a lot of fans, maybe more so than teams, may be concerned in terms of if you draft Connor Williams, Kyle, are you getting the 2016 version of Connor Williams where he really stood out, or are you getting that small sample size of 2017 where he was more plagued by injuries? And I know it's hard to really judge that based on 1 year, but how confident are you that he is going to return to his 2016 form during the course of his upcoming NFL career?
It's a good question, and I don't think it's necessarily applicable to just Connor Williams. I look at some of the other names that I'm really high on. Jaire Alexander, the corner from Louisville. Harold Landry, the defensive end from Boston College. Like, these guys in 2016, they were blue chip tape. They had blue chip traits on tape, and they were top tier players. And now they're kind of afterthoughts. I know Harold Landry's getting some surge back up now, but if you rewind to the summer before the 2017 college football season, there were scouts coming out saying Harold Landry had the highest senior evaluation we've given in the past decade.
Wow.
Well, where'd that go? Where did that narrative go? It's just totally up in air. Why? Because he had an ankle injury, and he's a speed rusher who thrives off cornering at high angles and steep angles. And you can't really do that all that effectively when you have an injury to your lower body. So I don't think the elite traits go away. So I look at a guy like Jaire. I look at a guy like Harold Landry, a guy like Connor Williams. That blue-chip talent just doesn't disappear. And I think that there's conditions where if you look at each one of these guys and put them under a microscope, you can see there's some context to why they weren't the blue-chip player that they were the year before. And most of the time, that talent doesn't just go away. So that's why I feel fairly confident in my Connor Williams assessment.
Why do you like Chukwuma Okorafor as much as you do?
Yeah, I think Chukwuma, he's a more raw version of Ronnie Stanley for me.
Oh, wow.
I saw a lot of Ronnie Stanley when I watched him on film. As far as his movement skills for his length, and we talked about Connor Williams at 33, length is not an issue for Chukwuma Okorafor. He's over 34 inches on the arms, so he's got a lot of length. He's very light on his feet, and he's able to work his hips across bodies fairly well. From a pass protection perspective, I'd like to see him get a little cleaner. I need to see him be able to get more consistent depth and temper his angles, particularly when he's taking either 45-degree sets or deeper pass sets on a 5- and 7-step drop game. When he's in the short game, he's just so big and long that he's really able to wall off and ride out very effectively because those plays are typically happening very quickly. So Chukwuma, if I'm looking at his upside, I think he can be a plus asset in the run game right away. He's got the needed length and size and functional athleticism, maybe not necessarily testing athleticism, but from a functional athleticism perspective, I like a lot of what he brings to the table. So I think you get him into a bigger style program. You get him with an NFL offensive line coach and really brush up on some of those pass protection issues that creep into his game. And I feel really good that this can be a plus starting offensive tackle in a league that has a drought for really good offensive linemen. So it's an interesting kind of perspective on the offensive tackle group where a lot of people are down on the offensive tackle group. I've got a lot of guys up in the round two and plus range that I think are going to need a little bit of time. But these are talented guys, and we need talented guys. So that's why you see some offensive tackles a little bit higher up in my rankings than you see in a lot of the general consensus.
Real quick, how long can a team wait, do you think, to get a player like him? Do you think they can wait till round three? Do they have to get him in round two? I know you're high on him. From what you've been hearing, when do you think the NFL team might pull the trigger on him?
Yeah, I think he's somewhere in the middle of day two.
Okay.
Maybe end of round two, beginning of day three. Always kind of hard, right? You never know when that one team that's going to fall in love or who's going to get gun-shy and not want to play roulette anymore is going to pull the trigger. So if you see a run on tackles, it might facilitate him getting off the board a little earlier than that. But I would expect some time, probably end of round two.
when you look at the Giants' offseason thus far, Kyle, I mean, they have addressed the offensive line, specifically at the tackle spot. They brought in Nate Solder from the Patriots. The plan is at least to have Ereck Flowers compete at right tackle, and they have brought in a few guards. And, you know, one player at that position who I see you have in the top 30 and is a name that a lot of Giants fans I know are considering with the second-round pick is Will Hernandez out of UTEP. You know, what's the upside out of Hernandez, and, you know, how do you see him transitioning his skill set to the NFL?
Yeah, so Hernandez is, if you run a lot of power schemes, you like to pull your guards, you like to double team and climb to the second level and pick off second level flow. Hernandez is a guy that's going to do a whole lot for you. He's boxy. He's built like a refrigerator, really, where he's just super wide.
He is.
And that width he uses to his advantage, because in tight spaces – he's very difficult to get hip to hip with, because he's just so wide. He takes up so much space. You know, we've talked about offensive line arm length for tackles. Well, Hernandez isn't over 33, and that's why you see that this is a guy that's inside. But because he's consistently hip to hip with his teammates, there's not a lot of opportunities to shed his hands and get hip to hip with him and create some backfield penetration. So if you are looking for, like, a team like Jacksonville, we got done talking about Cam Robinson and how he was an asset to their power run game this year. I know they went out and signed Andrew Norwell from Carolina to play one of their guard spots. But if Jacksonville gets to 29 and, you know, maybe, you know, their luxury pick of choice for a skill player is off the board, that's a pretty developed team. That's a team that I could see targeting Will Hernandez at the end of the first round with the Jacksonville Jaguars. I think he's a plug-and-play starter, but he's scheme-specific, so that's why he's a little bit further down for me than what you would see a team like Jacksonville, who is acknowledging that we need a player at this position. This player fits our scheme. We're going to prioritize him earlier in the draft.
Last question on the offensive line for me, Kyle. Three tackles that I think are going to be you have him in your second tier. I think one of these guys is going to sneak into the first round, specifically Colton Miller. I find Colton Miller and Jamarco Jones fascinating, because I think if you just watch them playing in football games, you go out and you say, boy, Jamarco Jones is a much better player than Colton Miller. But then you look at Colton Miller's traits and you think, oh, man, this guy has the traits to be a, you know, franchise left tackle with his athleticism. And then I'll throw a third guy into the mix in Will Richardson, who you have on your third or fourth tier of players as a day two pick that I know a lot of other people haven't talked a whole lot about. So can you just talk about those three guys, how you see them, and kind of where you see them going and what their strengths and weaknesses are?
Absolutely. My preference in those three guys is Jones and then Richardson and then Colton Miller. Colton Miller is just super raw.
Yeah.
So as you said, you watch him on tape, and you know, there's false steps and there's bad angles, and his hand strike isn't well-timed. So oftentimes he gets kind of busted at that point of first contact where he'll let guys get a hold of him first and his base isn't properly set. I don't necessarily know if I buy and subscribe into the athletic testing being all that much of a needle mover for me once you get to a certain degree. Like, I want at least average NFL offensive line athleticism, but beyond that, I think a technician's going to eat the lunch of a super athlete like Brian O'Neill from Pitt, for example, where he's another one that tested through the roof at the combine and is super raw. And, you know, that's not a player I'm not touching until the middle portions of day three. He's a total project.
Yeah, and, you know, Kyle, by the way, I watched Brian O'Neill at the Senior Bowl. He had all sorts of problems at practice that week.
And this is a player, because he's an athlete, you'll hear some people suggest he's a top 50 prospect. And you watch him at the week at the Senior Bowl, and you're wondering who's even going to pull the trigger and draft him to play offensive tackle.
You're right.
He was not good. So for that reason, like, Miller is a guy I'm much lower on because he's so much raw athlete right now and needs so much technical work. Jamarco is kind of the opposite. He didn't test all that well.
No.
I do know in his offseason preparations, he's working with LaCharles Bentley. LaCharles has a big emphasis on functional stuff. So they're focused on their pass sets. They're focused on their hand placement and where they carry their hands and where they get their hand fit on defensive linemen. So those sorts of things, if they were really focused on that, you know, Jamarco came in and disappointed with his athletic testing, but you watch him on film, I don't think he's a bad functional athlete. So
So I think he meets that threshold of average functional athleticism for offensive linemen. And then Will Richardson reminds me a lot of a guy who actually went in the top 20 a couple years ago, Juwan James, now with the Miami Dolphins out of Tennessee. Richardson had two suspensions during his time at NC State, so there's some red tape here off the field that anybody who drafts him needs to be aware of. But he feels like a plug-and-play right tackle because his functional athleticism and functional strength is really strong. He's got great length in his arms, and he's able to just ride guys out. So he's not the most fleet of foot, but once he gets his hands on you, A, he's got great grip strength, and B, he's got enough juice in his feet that he can turn and ride you out and really lengthen that corner on the edge as a pass protector.
Talking with Kyle Krebs, founder of NTT Scouting. Kyle, you mentioned you're pretty high on some offensive linemen, more so than other experts or other people that have put together mock drafts. From an offensive standpoint, where is the most significant drop-off in this draft? If it's not offensive linemen, where is it? Running back, wide receiver, where do you see a position on offense that you need to be aggressive early because there's no way you're going to make up for it later on?
Yeah, I think it's the wide receiver group. If I'm looking at the wide receiver group, there were five or six guys that were in contention for me entering the combine to end up finishing as my wide receiver one because I do a numerical scoring. So at the end of the day, I just hit sort on the numbers, and the numbers tell me where the guys are going to rank. So I ended up with really high grades on Anthony Miller from Memphis, Cortland Sutton from SMU, and DJ Moore from Maryland. I get a couple more guys as like late round two players, and then that's it. Now we're into day three. We're really lean at wide receiver. Another guy I did like was James Washington, but if you want an alpha guy, if you want a player that's going to come in and step in right away, you might have two or three options in this draft class, and I would expect to see them be put at a premium. Teams that might need a wide receiver, whether that's the Dallas Cowboys, I know they just went out and signed Allen Hurns,
yeah,
or the Arizona Cardinals, or the Baltimore Ravens, or these teams in the middle of the first round that have a glaring hole at wide receiver, they are really flirting with either we're not going to draft him and we're not going to get anybody, or we have to take him in the first round.
And I think this is a good example of what we talked about at the top of the show, Kyle, about how your rankings will not mimic other people. And I think almost universally, from what I've seen, people have Calvin Ridley as their top wide receiver in this draft. You have him as a late second, early third round player, your 67th player overall on your board, which I think for me is a little surprising because I know how much you worry about the tape as opposed to athletic scores. And I know he suffered a little bit because the only thing he really did that well at the combine was his 40 time, and his other numbers really weren't that good, especially his vertical and broad jumps. But I thought on film he got open and created a lot of separation. So why aren't you that high on Calvin Ridley?
Yeah, and this is a good example of the context in scouting, right? Like, I watched his film. I liked his film. I thought he ran really good routes.
Yeah.
He did have some issues catching the ball from time to time. And if you've got a defender that can stay on his hip pocket, he's not going to catch the ball. I believe I saw he had like a 20% contested catch conversion rate. So
interesting.
He's not a physical receiver at all. And that one-dimensional aspect of his game was something that hurt him a little bit in the film assessment. And then you look at the areas that I complement my film grades with. For receivers, the two biggest ones were size-adjusted athleticism. He's not a big receiver, and he tested poorly, and he did not have great production. So those things combined, when you put them amongst his peers, like kind of the alternate version of him is James Washington from Oklahoma State, who's a non-traditional build as a wide receiver, had really good tape, created separation vertically down the field, but he has great contested catch skills. And he had a 39-inch vert at his pro day and ran reasonably well, where Calvin ran reasonably well when he ran, but the rest of the testing was very non-explosive.
Yeah.
So it's that dynamic between the two where you can start to put the parallels together and then see the dividing factors and the tiebreakers where James Washington had good production. That showed on film because he was good 50-50 ball receiver, and he was able to win those contested targets where Calvin didn't. So that's kind of where I stand with Calvin. Even though I really like him, I think if you need a Z receiver, a guy to play on the outside off the line of scrimmage where he doesn't have to worry about press, I like him in that role. I think he can start in that role.
Well, in terms of somebody that has the size, because, I mean, I'm looking back at the Giants right now, and, you know, they have Odell Beckham, they have Sterling Shepard. If they're looking for somebody with the size, that end zone target, I mean, who would be a name that would jump out to you, and assuming you're not necessarily targeting this position in the first round?
Sure. Cortland Sutton is the dream, but as we said, you know, there's going to be only a couple receivers that get premium in the first round. He feels like one of them. His ceiling's pretty strong. He reminded me a lot of Corey Davis, who came out last year and went fifth overall to the Tennessee Titans when I watched him on film. So if we're looking at more size as far as niche players, another Oklahoma State receiver, Marcel Aitman, is a guy that I liked pretty well as far as 50-50 throws, ability to win at the catch point and win with size. Javon Wims from Georgia is another one. He had some of the best contested catches I've seen from anybody in the entire draft class. He's a pretty unexperienced player. He came from JUCO. He played 2 years at Georgia, really only started this year. But he's a solid 6'3 plus, 210 plus, and he beats up defensive backs at the catch point. He's really effective in flashing his hands late. So defenders really don't have an opportunity to react to his hands and play through his hands when the ball gets there, because he'll wait till that ball's right on top of him and then throw it out there, and he's really good at catching those types of targets. So back shoulder throws, end zone fades, those sorts of targets are things where Javon Wims really stands out. If you need size as a complimentary receiver, that's a name that stands out to me.
You know, Colin, it's funny. You know, you mentioned Ridley as a really good starting Z, and then Sutton as one of the bigger guys. I don't see a lot of X wide receivers in this draft, especially based on their production during the season. And I think two guys that kind of showed up a little bit based on the Senior Bowl and the Combine were two of the bigger guys that tested well, DJ Chark out of LSU and Equanimeous St. Brown out of Notre Dame. But, you know, I think their film's hard to watch because they had such rough quarterback situations and weren't really put in many positions to make plays. Where do you think these guys are going to land? Do you think some teams are going to be desperate to find that wide receiver with those physical traits to be an X, that they're going to go a lot higher than maybe they deserve based on their tape?
Yeah, I think that's a great point, and I could totally see that where, you know, you see this at all positions, right? You see this at quarterback all the time where, you know, somebody is desperate for an answer at a position that's really important to their offense. So they're going to invest on a guy who's a much bigger project than we were willing to admit, because we see what the traits are. We see the flashes of what this player can be if they put it all together and they take that next step. So the investment's made much earlier than possible. It's just amplified with quarterback because it almost always happens at the top 15 picks.
Right.
So a guy like Chark, I liked Chark a lot more when I went back and watched his film than what I did at the Senior Bowl. I watched him at the Senior Bowl in the first couple days. He got beat up by MJ Stewart on press coverage a lot. Like, MJ was in his face, and he had a really hard time getting off the line of scrimmage. And that was my first extended sampling of DJ. So then I went back and watched his college tape after. That was not a player who I had the report written before the Senior Bowl, and I was pleasantly surprised to see that, oh, thank goodness. You know, this is a guy that can separate vertically, and he can show off some nice ball skills and good high point ability. He's got good speed after the catch. So I thought DJ, he's a guy that I would be more excited about than EQ St. Brown out of Notre Dame. But, John, as you said, like, it's really hard to get a gauge on the ball skills when every throw is off the body. So, you know, their eyes are back to the ball and the quarterback, and it's 5 yards over their head or it's 3 yards behind them. So that's an instance where, you know, we were asked about what pro days can do for you and what team workouts can do for you. Have somebody in your building to throw to those guys. I think that's a good example, actually, now that we're talking through this, where you can get some value from a workout in the post-combine draft process, because you can see those guys working outside of the conditions of their own team, which were not very friendly to their individual film when you're trying to get a gauge on where they're at as a player.
Yeah, more proven quarterback in that setting. I think it certainly helped the stock of a wide receiver if they didn't have that benefit during the course of the regular season. Well, speaking of offensive players, you know, you mentioned wide receiver. There's a drop-off. Personally, in my opinion, I think the running back position has a great deal of depth, Kyle, and this may be a year, and I know this is always a debate every single year. Well, if there's so much depth at running back and the shelf life is not that high, you know, why should I reach as a team executive on a running back early if I could get somebody in the mid to late rounds? I've got a good offensive line. How do you see this running back class, and do you believe there is a lot of depth there?
I do think there's some depth here. I think the depth this year is more niche specific, where I see a guy like Justin Jackson from Northwestern and think he's a terrific receiving back, a player that can fill the James White role in New England very, very, very well. If you're looking for three down players, I think you've got a couple shots at them. I would say you've probably got six or seven. Saquon Barkley, for me, is head and shoulders above the rest. He is a blue-chip player in the draft and one of the more special players that's come through over the course of the past several seasons, in my personal opinion. I also really like Nick Chubb. Nick Chubb from Georgia, we saw his explosiveness back this past year. He's had that second gear when he uncovered from an alleyway and was into the second level, much more so than the year before. Really impressed with his athletic testing, too. He went to the combine at 227 and jumped 38.5 inches on the vert with a 4.52 on the 40. His size-adjusted speed was terrific. So he's actually my second-rated running back in the class ahead of Darius Geis, who I also like. He's in my top 30 players as well. Ronald Jones is one. I remember sitting down, getting ready to talk to you guys at the combine, looking up and getting disappointed because Ronald Jones ran a 4.62 and then found out that he pulled his hammy on the run. So I don't know if we're going to get a chance to see him run. And if we do, I don't know if it's going to be an accurate depiction of what he's got, but I think he's got good long speed. Sony Michel's another one that I really like. So you've got options, but you can't wait too long this year. So I think you'll see these guys going top 50, top 60 picks.
So you think you're pushing your luck if you're waiting till the top around three? You're getting really close to having none of those top five, six, seven guys left.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you might see, like, Rashad Penny is a name that's pretty popular because he had a great year from a production standpoint. And I look at Penny, and I think he's really good at everything, but I don't think he's great at anything.
Okay.
So if you're looking for a guy that can step in, fill all the roles, one thing that's going to be a problem for him is he's not very good in pass protection, and you consistently see pass protection is the area of a running back's game as a young player that keeps him off the field.
That's true.
So that's a bit of a concern for me with Penny. But if you're looking for somebody that should be there in that beginning of round three range, if you want somebody with three down upside, Penny's probably going to be your guy that's left on the board.
All right, I want to jump to another position of need for the Giants. That's the linebacker position on defense. Obviously, the Giants traded for Alec Ogletree in the offseason. They signed Kareem Martin, but they're going to a 3-4 defense. You are in line with everybody else where you have Tremaine Edmonds and Roquan Smith as your two top linebackers, very good players. So I want to go to the next group, and I want you to differentiate for me how you separate the skills of Rashawn Evans. I know you like Fred Warner a whole lot.
Yep.
And Van Der Esch and Darius Leonard. Tell me how those four players are different, and depending on what you're looking for, which one of those guys match you like.
Sure. Well, I think Van Der Esch, I don't think he's going to be your problem. I don't think he's going to make it outside of the top 20, 25.
Wow, okay.
Based off of some of the things that I've been told, but he's a guy that I would like to see him get a little bit more assertive playing into the line of scrimmage. But he's a guy that has the size and the length to be able to play off of contact really well. He can be that thumper inside in an odd man front. I think he's probably the best fit to do that out of the names that you had mentioned. Darius Leonard, small school kid. He's a little bit more see it and chase it style, a little bit more of a traditional 4-3 will where you put him out in space and let him pursue. Rashawn Evans has some good versatility where he's able to stand up on the outside and rush as a pass rusher from time to time. That's actually what his background is in. You can play him in the middle. I thought he took nice strides this year as far as his comfort playing in space, but this isn't necessarily a player that, you know, you look back to Reuben Foster out of Alabama last year. Reuben Foster's football IQ was notably better than what you have in Rashawn Evans, and that was what was made him such a special player, if not for the red flags off the field that you see San Francisco kind of wrestling with now. And then Fred Warner, for me, I would give him a shot at Mike if you're playing an even front. If you're playing an odd front, he's probably going to be the inside linebacker that you task with playing some man-to-man coverage on tight ends. I think he's probably the best coverage linebacker out of the guys that we've discussed.
Okay.
He's kind of this new-age NFL linebacker where you can put him outside the hashes and let him play some press and zone coverage out there. BYU did that a good bit. He's got good speed. He's a pretty explosive athlete. He's got enough length where he's got a good tackle radius about him. So he's kind of like the blend of some of the traits that you get from the other three guys that are more scheme specifics. He's more of the hybrid type player than the other guys that you mentioned.
Well, based on what you just said, Kyle, I mean, you hit the money term when it comes to James Betcher, the new defensive coordinator for the Giants, who is with the Cardinals, because he thrived with hybrid players in Arizona.
Yeah.
So, I mean, based on your breakdown of these linebackers that John listed, it seems as if the last one could very well be the best fit for this new 3-4 scheme that the Giants are adopting. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I mean, you look at Arizona and the guys that they've had there over the course of the past couple of years. Obviously, the poster child there is Deion Buchanan, who came out of Washington State as a safety. And they bumped him down inside and are playing him an inside linebacker. So I would certainly say if you're looking for a guy that can blitz and blitz effectively off the second level, not up on the line of scrimmage, you're looking for a guy that can go out and play some bump coverage on slot receivers, that's going to be Fred Warner more so than this other group that was listed in the second tier linebackers.
Lorenzo Carter, what position is he going to play in the NFL? He tested off the charts. He can rush the passer, but people think because of his athletic scoring, he can play in space and he can cover. Where do you see him as a long-term fit in the pros?
Yeah, I think his development is really well underway as a pass rusher. I think that's probably where he needs to be kept.
Okay.
Lorenzo Carter came into his senior year at Georgia as kind of just a plus athlete that made some splash plays because he was a long, twitchy athlete. And then he spent some time with Chuck Smith, who's a former NFL player and pass rush specialist coach, before his senior year. And he came out the other end of that, and you saw some flashes of, okay, he's grasping how to corner and get underneath the hands of an offensive lineman and you know, turn the corner on a pretty tight angle and develop some consistent pressure and how to use his hands to play off of contact. So seeing those things start to peek through his tape, I thought he grew notably as a player from 2016 to 2017 as a pass rusher. So that's probably where I would be keeping him if I was going to draft him.
Talking with Kyle Krabs, founder of NDT Scouting, I want to jump to cornerback, which is another position that
was on my list.
Certainly, well, John and I are on the same page here, as you can tell, Kyle, and that's another position that, you know, you can make the argument the Giants could utilize some depth. DRC, they parted ways with. They lost Ross Cockrell in free agency. They could very well utilize a guy, to me, that has some size that could play on the outside to complement Eli Apple and Janoris Jenkins. You know, who fits the profile, Kyle, in your mind that, you know, may be around the second round when the Giants are selecting that would be an ideal corner for their scheme?
And could maybe play the slot, too, since
who's
they don't have somebody
enough
that can move that.
Absolutely.
Since Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie was let go.
Yeah, the corner group is a group that's interesting because I don't think, you know, we kind of teased scheme-specific guys. I don't see a lot of schemes or a lot of universal scheme players in the corner group altogether. I think all of these guys are guys that are going to be scheme-dependent. So if I move down past my top tier, which is Denzel Ward and Jair Alexander, and I'm looking for length. I'm looking through my list right now.
Well,
is kind of light to play in that system. Holden Hill's an interesting
one. That was going to be the name I was going to throw out. Yeah.
Yeah, Holden Hill from Texas. Apparently, he's got a big amount of character concerns coming out of Texas, so you have to vet him very carefully. But I really thought Holden Hill was tremendous as far as playing up on the line of scrimmage at Texas and then getting his eyes back to the line of scrimmage. So the ball skills are fair. He's probably the best tackling corner in the class. I mean, he feels like a safety in the alleyway. He will light you up on the outside, and I really love that about his game. The question is the price going to be right for Holton Hill when there's some concerns here? I'll give you a name at nickel, too, a guy's playing the slot, and that's Danny Johnson from Southern, a small school kid. He's got 16 career interceptions. So anytime you get a small school player like this, you want a guy that's going to check the box and say he dominated the competition. You watch his film, he dominated against that level of competition. You look at the production, he dominated in that area as well. So Danny Johnson's a guy who has really, really good ball skills, and a role like the nickel role for him would lend very favorably to him because he's protected vertically and you give him a chance to play aggressive on the ball. And he's got the movement skills to stick with a lot of guys in space.
I want to get to this up the top of the draft, Kyle. Then we got to run real quick. Two sleepers that you like, I know, are Nathan Shepherd and Jannard Avery. Tell me why.
Oh, man, Nathan Shepherd. We talked about Will Hernandez earlier. I had never seen anybody bully Will Hernandez on tape. And then you get to the Senior Bowl, and Nathan Shepherd just beats up Will Hernandez on more than one occasion in the one-on-ones. And he's pulling him off his set, and just the amount of strength that he has and the power and urgency in his hands to get hands off of him, I think, is really, really unique. And his story is tremendous. And, you know, we just got done talking about level of competition and needing to see domination. He dominated the D3 level. And then he came into the Senior Bowl, and he proved that he belongs. Jannard Avery from Memphis, guy I had a chance to see twice live this year. I got a chance to see Memphis play against UConn and UCLA. Kind of has some similar traits to a lot of the hybrid-type linebackers that you see get prioritized over the course of the past couple years. One of our national scouts, Jonah Tolles, compared him to Hassan Reddick. I think that's a bit rich for my personal taste, but it gives you an idea of the type of diversity that he has and his ability to fulfill off the edge and be a guy that plays off the ball. And he's got good sideline to sideline speed. He's a thumper as well. He's got some good oomph on his pads.
Kyle, final question before we go. Just thoughts of the Giants at 2, and give me your predictions for the Giants' first and second round picks. We're going to be tracking them as we head up towards the draft.
Oh, man. They're such a hard team to place because I would be one way, and I feel like the team's looking a different direction. So I'm probably going to end up siding with Saquon Barkley at 2. And if I'm looking early second round for them, I'd love to see him go Fred Warner. I'm going to go ballsy and go Fred Warner.
Okay, so you got Barkley
who is my 34th rated player, by the way.
Nice. Yeah. Okay, so you got Barkley and Warner, but if you were making the pick, you would go quarterback? Is that what the sense I got from you?
Yeah, I would probably go with either Josh Rosen or Baker Mayfield out of those two. Those two are my top two passers personally.
Got it.
I think Rosen in that setting would really be able to get the most out of those receivers that they do have on the roster there. And then obviously Evan Engram. Rosen loved to hit the tight ends. Obviously Mayfield had Mark Andrews there at Oklahoma, but Rosen threw the Y-shake route better than anybody else. And getting Evan Engram one-on-one with linebackers in the middle of the field and running the Y-shake, I mean, that would be a dream come true.
Yeah, it would. Kyle, great stuff. We appreciate the time. Thanks so much for joining us, and enjoy your weekend.
Thanks a lot, Kyle. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much, guys.
That's Kyle Krabs, NDT Scouting. Check out the book. Thanks a lot for joining us. Enjoy your holiday weekend, everybody. For Lance Metal, I'm John Schmelk. We'll see you on Monday on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. Have a great weekend.
Have a good one.